Of a prize fighter named Kid Broad, John Lardner once wrote, "The kid had a face only a mother could love, and even his mother managed to control her enthusiasm pretty well." That's one of the many memorable lines that's been made available again in the John Lardner Reader, a Press Box Legends classic sports writing. The editor of the book is John Shulian, who joins me now from KPCC in Pasadena. John, welcome back to Only a Game.
Thank you, Bill. It's good to be here.
You have called the first sentence of John Lardner's 1954 story about boxer Stanley Ketchell, quote, "the 25 most perfect words ever written in the name of journalism." So perhaps we had better begin there. Read those 25 words, please.
My pleasure. Stanley Ketchell was 24 years old when he was fatally shot in the back by the common law husband of the lady who was cooking his breakfast.
How do you suppose John Lardner avoided worrying that whatever he wrote next would screw up the lead?
Well, he had a lot of practice. He was a master of great leads, and somehow he always got you not just to the second paragraph or through it. He got you to the end. He was an amazing, pure, great writer.
Well, tell us a little bit about the author of those exceptional lines.
John Lardner was the son of Ring Lardner, the eldest son, one of four boys, all of whom pursued the writing life. John Lardner himself was a war correspondent in World War II. And as A.J. Liebling said, he was the bravest correspondent he ever saw, because when there was a bomb flash in the distance, Lardner would walk toward it to get a better look. Lardner wrote about the theater, and he was a TV critic. He could write about anything, obviously. But what he was first and foremost was a great sports writer in perhaps the golden age of sports writing. And by that I mean sports writing was taking a great turn in the middle of the 20th century. It was moving away from hacks who spewed cliches and kept a bottle in their bottom drawer and took bribes from wrestling promoters. There weren't a great many great sports writers in that period, but the ones who were great were off the charts. And I'm speaking in particular of Red Smith, W.C. Hines, Jimmy Cannon, and John Lardner.
John Lardner began a story about Babe Herman for Sport magazine with another memorable lead paragraph. I wonder if you would favor us with that one as well.
Floyd Caves Herman, known as Babe, did not always catch fly balls on the top of his head, but he could do it in a pinch. He never tripled into a triple play, but he once doubled into a double play, which is the next best thing.
Do you think John Lardner had better subjects to write about than today's sports writers? I mean, Stanley Ketchell, Babe Herman, and then Casey Stengel and Satchel Paige and Walter Hagen and Titanic Thompson. The list goes on and on.
It was a looser time. There's so much in stake in sports today, financially, that looseness, that mischief, while it may still be there in private, is never on display publicly. Plus, you've got TMZ and Entertainment Tonight and rat-faced kids with cameras and their iPhones taking pictures of ballplayers in compromising situations. And it can't be. The world John Lardner wrote about simply is gone with the wind as all those wonderful Damon Runyon characters.
John, I've cherry-picked some of my favorite passages from the book. It's not perhaps entirely fair for me to be the only one doing that. Have you got a favorite?
Let me turn to any random page, and I can probably find something that I really like. So much of what Lardner wrote was funny. Only rarely does he let melancholy slip into his work, or just a touch of the blues. And there's a wonderful column he wrote for Newsweek called No Scar, No Memory. And it begins this way. Chicago. An oddly shocking and confusing thing, neither good nor very bad, neither just nor very cruel, happened to Gene Fulmer, the young Mormon prize fighter, in the boxing hall here the other night. When he went into the ring, his life was at its peak. He was famous, newly rich, powerful, confident, rising. A few minutes later, he fell from power and glory to frustration and relative nothingness, and he cannot tell you of his own knowledge what happened. Not only power and glory are gone, the facts are missing too. 30 seconds of time at a climax of his existence are lost to him. To know what went on, he has to be told. To believe it, he has to look at a set of pictures, and this will be true for the rest of his life. It will be a strange, unsettling way to live. And the thrust of this is that Gene Fulmer got knocked out by Sugar Ray Robinson.
What do you think today's readers can learn from John Lardner's work?
I would hope they could see the heights to which sports writing can go, that they would appreciate the beauty of his sentences. You read these pieces he wrote, and they are so perfectly constructed. There's an economy of language. There's a beauty of language. The great wit. One thing I neglected to say earlier, what a quiet man Lardner was. We live in the noisiest era that I can imagine. Sports writers have certainly paraded in front of the camera. Some of them are quite wonderful, but a lot of other sports writers who appear regularly on camera shouldn't. And John Lardner was this incredibly quiet man. He probably had very dear friends who may not have heard him utter 10 sentences in their entire friendship.
I'm speaking with John Shulian, the editor of the John Lardner Reader, and you're listening to Only a Game. The evidence that John Lardner didn't take himself too seriously is everywhere in his work. In the middle of a story about battling Siki, another long-gone boxer, he writes, and I'm quoting now, "In the unlikely event that you want to visit the scene of the murder 24 years ago of a man called Battling Siki, which is what I did one day recently for no useful reason, you will come across a few surviving landmarks." That, for no useful reason, is refreshing, isn't it?
Yes, we're in an age when people in the media seem to take themselves awfully seriously. The kind of sports column that John Lardner wrote, he spun yarns. He painted pictures of these great characters. He wasn't saying, look, you got to trade the shortstop, you know, the shortstop has lost range, you know, you got to fire the general manager. There was none of that. It was, these are games. Games are for fun. Come along and laugh with me.
This tone, for no useful reason and so on, is extraordinary given the physical difficulties John Lardner faced. Give us a sense of some of those challenges.
Oh, he had multiple sclerosis, heart trouble, tuberculosis. He was just afflicted from every direction, it seemed. One of the reasons that he's been forgotten, neglected for so long, is that he did himself the great disservice of dying a month before his 48th birthday in 1960. And there's a great story about his death. He was at home in his apartment in New York, and he had a heart attack. Somehow Lardner's personal physician made it to his side. And the physician is beside himself. He's saying, "John, you can't die. You cannot die, John. You're a noble man." And Lardner looked up at him and said, "Oh, Lou, that sounds like a quotation." And then he died.
Oh, my goodness. John Shulian is the editor of the John Lardner Reader, a PressBox Legends classic sports writing. The book is published by University of Nebraska Press, and John Shulian joined me from KPCC in Pasadena. John, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Bill, it's my pleasure. Take care.
It's 22 and a half minutes before the hour.
Support for Only a Game comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced. Oliver Wyman, an international strategy consulting firm. With 3,000 professionals worldwide, Oliver Wyman serves global 1,000 companies. OliverWyman.com. And Nuance, offering Dragon speech recognition software for creating documents and emails and surfing the web all by speaking at nuance.com/NPR. This is NPR.
The winner of the Tour Championship in Atlanta last Sunday was PGA veteran Jim Furyk. The losers were all the sporting goods companies that have been trying to convince golfers to spend a lot of money on new high-tech custom clubs. Mr. Furyk realized $1.3 million for winning the event, which also put him over the top in terms of the FedEx Cup, meaning that he will soon be shipped a brown box containing another $10 million if it hasn't already arrived. The club with which Mr. Furyk tapped his way along the greens to said riches cost him $39 at a discount golf shop, which suggests that most, if not all, of the people who've been seeking to improve their games by purchasing high-end putters should check out Goodwill instead. I call that a bargain, the best.